You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show. If you haven't already, you're missing out. Make sure you get all the latest episodes. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your next order. What a day it's been. An early afternoon game for the Miami Heat. Tip off at 1 o'clock at the American Airlines Arena. Coming off a blowout loss to the Indiana Pacers on Friday. A game I did not recap because I was out celebrating my wife's birthday. And turns out I made the right decision. You can blame that one on me if you want to. I didn't watch. I didn't contribute my good mojo. But I was watching tonight's game, rather this afternoon's game, and ultimately didn't make much of a difference. Miami started off just as badly as they did on Friday, giving up way too many easy looks for the Pacers, scrambling on defense, couldn't rotate quickly enough. We've all talked about it via Twitter. If you haven't seen the latest, basically it's just a flaw in their defense where they're consciously giving up three-point shots for reasons that I'm not quite sure I understand. I guess they feel like they could rotate quickly enough because it's the shortest distance to cover, and so they're consciously giving up those shots, knowing that it's going to be a lot harder to rotate to shots from above the break or at the wing. And so they're letting the ball swing around. They're trapping the ball handlers. The ball handler kicks it out to somebody on the wing. They rotate the ball, and that usually leaves the defense exposed where they wind up having to rotate again to cover up as the ball keeps moving. So they're always, in effect, a step behind, especially when you have subpar defenders in the starting lineup or throughout the lineup, basically. No Goran Dragic, speaking of which, in today's game. But the corner three was falling for the Pacers early on. 6 of 6 to start off the game. Eventually, they wind up just going 7 of 10, so 1 of 4 for the rest of the game. But by that point, a trend had been set for the Pacers, for the Heat, and they couldn't really complement it. They couldn't really match Indiana's output. They were getting picked apart by TJ McConnell, Justin Holiday, Domantas Sabonis was having a monster game. Miles Turner, what a year he's had. As a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, he was certainly effective, had 5 blocks in the night, and in key situations against almost every player, it seemed like he was a factor. Duncan Robinson, after the game, spoke about whether or not it was a challenge going up against a guy like Turner, and he acknowledged that there was a conversation at halftime, acknowledging that he does impact shots at the rim. You have to make adjustments. Overall, they made those, but Tyler Hero kept going at Turner, got a shot swatted twice. Bam Adebayo, same thing. So it not exactly, even when he wasn't getting the shot block, he was still impacting shots. Not quite, perhaps, Hassan Whiteside at his peak in Miami, but somewhere along those same lines where you're certainly conscious of his presence there. Not Rudy Gobert, let's say. In any case, Miami found a way to more or less hang with the Pacers. They were able to score a lot of their points in their paint. They actually outscored Indiana by a pretty wide margin in there. Finished with 54 points in the paint as compared to just 38 for the Pacers. But a lot of that was because they were shooting so badly from the perimeter, they had to find ways to score. Finished the game just 9 of 37 from three-point range, 24.3% overall. We're getting to the line at a pretty healthy amount, 19 of 23 from the free throw line. Shot 40% overall. But the second and third quarters seemed like almost this kind of morass mirror image of one another where Indiana would just go ahead and do enough to keep Miami at bay. Miami would have a nice run here and there, followed by a couple bad plays. But Jimmy Butler was out of the game early on. It seemed like Miami's everything, I can't say whether or not it was their offense or defense, but just everything seemed to fall apart to some degree. Bam did his share to certainly complement and carry the team in his absence, but mostly had a really, really strong showing in the second half. I'll talk about a little bit later. Ultimately, the Pacers wound up going into the fourth quarter with a 9-point lead, and it looked like it was going to be a pretty bad loss for Miami yet again, who then wound up cutting the lead to 3 points with just 8 minutes left. But before you knew it, the Pacers were back up to an 8-point lead, and then Miami closes the game on an 8-2 run. Wound up going, tying the game at 98 and going to overtime, but the tie felt disappointing Because, yes, Miami had managed to make a run on a team that they probably should have found a way to beat early on. And then with 48 seconds left in the game, Bam Adebayo blocks a Malcolm Brogdon shot that leads to a rebound to Jimmy Butler, who sees Tyler Flaring kicking out to ignite the fast break opportunity. He collects the ball. Well, Jimmy throws it to Tyler, who collects the ball. And then inexplicably, with about 41 seconds left, winds up putting up a wide-open three-point shot when Miami was down 98-97. The shot rims out. Indiana collects a rebound, goes down on the other end, winds up being held scoreless for the rest of the game. And then Jimmy Butler winds up getting fouled on the other end and making just one of two free throws, so he couldn't seal the victory for Miami. Did tie it up. And then they go into overtime. Before I go into the overtime period, as far as the last stretch there in the end of the fourth quarter, I don't know what Tyler was thinking. He wasn't made available to media today. Nobody talked about it. Nobody asked Jimmy or Bam or Duncan, who were available to media members. But still, as far as what I could tell, it seemed like maybe Tyler looked up the clock, said, okay, there's 41 seconds left. If I put up the shot quickly now, whether I hit or miss, and whether or not they'll be able to collect the ball later on, the Heat will still have another opportunity at a shot attempt. And it did work out to that effect. Like, ideally, he would have hit the shot and it wouldn't have mattered. But he missed it. Indiana held the ball, collected the rebound, wound up being held scoreless. There was a defensive stop there from Miami. And then on the other end, again, Jimmy was fouled. So it kind of worked out. I don't know if that was his line of thinking. Maybe I'm justifying it. Maybe I'm trying to find a rational explanation. A lot of people were kind of scratching their head just because Tyler had struggled so much offensively all game long that when he winds up taking that shot from, again, at 41 seconds left, when you're only down one and you kind of rush into a three-pointer that hasn't been falling for you, ooh, tough to stomach. In the moment, it seemed a lot worse than it was, perhaps. Without any kind of clarification from Tyler or Spo or anybody. It just did not seem good. As for Jimmy, missing that one free throw kind of hurt. And then at the end of regulation, Miami had another attempt to try to stop the clock. I think with a few seconds left, Eric Spoelstra seen signaling to referee Loren Holtkamp that he wanted a timeout, but it was kind of it was somewhat of a half-assed request for a timeout. Kind of points his hands together, and then Holtkamp might not have been able to hear him because, again, Spo is wearing a mask as he's standing on the sidelines. And in any case, he doesn't really press for it. He doesn't jump out or doesn't try to tackle the referee to get her attention. And by that point, Jimmy's rushing down court anyway, winds up putting an ill-advised three-pointer as the time expired, and that missed two going into overtime. Now, Jimmy, after the game, said, it didn't really matter that Spo didn't get that timeout called. I was going to take that shot regardless. Unfortunately, he didn't hit it. And in overtime, well, Miami built a five-point lead. Looked like they had managed to get All-Star DeMontis Sabonis out of the game and in foul trouble, and it looked like they were going to be able to cruise to a victory. But too much shooting from Indiana, too much rim protection from Miles Turner, and unfortunately, the Pacers closed out the game on an 11-3 run and wind up sending Miami to their third straight loss. A positive. Jimmy's overall game, obviously, and aside from that, Bam Adebayo, 29 points, 11-21 shooting, 7-8 from the field. I'm sorry, from the free throw line, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks, plus 22, higher than anybody on either team, and he was just incredible, having a tremendous impact, dunking the ball with authority, absolutely put DeMontis Sabonis in a body bag with one of the best dunks I have ever seen in game in my life. It was just kind of reminds me of Blake Griffin, I want to say, dunking on Kendrick Perkins. But the difference was that Blake had to throw the ball into the rim, which makes it not a dunk. For Bam, he just propelled himself even higher and wound up finishing in a way that I had never seen before. Like, we all know that Bam has monster dunks. And I know it's kind of feels weak to just point out a dunk, one signature play, as a positive, but you got to hang your hat on something. You got to look for something positive here, because otherwise it's not as great. Now, Bam had a great showing. I've questioned in recent episodes and even on other shows whether or not Bam's ability to step up as a number two or even a 1B to Jimmy's 1A would make a difference for this team. Today, he certainly had a monster game, outscored Jimmy, outscored everybody, really, and just, again, massively impactful, taking over the game, having key stops, making big plays, getting to the line, getting and-one situations. Whenever Miami was looking for an answer, today it was Bam Adebayo and not Jimmy Butler who wound up stepping up for the Heat. Unfortunately, it wound up not being enough. And why? Because, well, the Heat were bad in almost every other aspect. 4 of 25, 16%. That's the shooting ratio for the trio of Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, and Kelly Olynyk. Now, I don't even include Kendrick Nunn's 1 of 2. He only played 23 minutes, and his minutes seem to be getting yanked around somewhat, despite the fact that there aren't any other really available guard options on this team. Gabe Vincent wound up playing a lot with Goran Dragic missing the game. 18 minutes for Vincent. He finished 3 of 4 from three-point range. He was impactful and somehow wasn't there in the second half. Not quite sure what happened there. Spo keeps going to his guys. I don't want to blame Spo for it. I think it's just a combination of things. Like, you want to go to your guys that have gotten you to this point in the first place. That's how you build trust. That's how you show faith, whatever. Unfortunately, when they're shooting 16% from three-point range, as that trio did, probably not such a good idea. Go to KZ Okpala. Go to Gabe Vincent. Try something different, because this group isn't getting it done. As good as Kelly Olynyk has been over the last couple weeks when they were winning games and in between, before and after the All-Star break, since the last couple games, he struggled. He got into foul trouble against the Memphis Grizzlies, didn't shoot well against the Pacers on Friday, didn't shoot well against the Pacers on Sunday. 3 of 11 overall, 1 of 7 from the field. I'm not quite sure what's going on with him, just other than Kelly being Kelly. As far as Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero are concerned, I have to say that whole trio probably have some major confidence issues going on. Now, I'll answer some questions. I thankfully got a lot of questions from a lot of you, and so I am very grateful for that, because otherwise it's pretty easy to just chalk this up as, well, Miami really sucked today, that they're struggling really badly shooting, that they're giving up easy looks for their opponents. Eric Spoelstra kind of flatly rejecting that notion when it was asked after the game whether or not he had any concerns about the three-point shot. He said, no, the head coach of the team doesn't really care, that the narratives are kind of building. That's Spo trying to take the heat off some of his guys, no pun intended there. I feel like he's always trying to be protective of his guys, which is the right move. You don't want to throw your guys, especially with a player like Duncan Robinson, or a young player like Tyler Hero, or even a veteran like Kelly Olynyk, who has been in and out of Spo's doghouse over the last 3.5 seasons. You don't want to throw them under the bus there, where their confidence is shaken even more. The reality is, I think that all three of those guys are being linked to a number of different trade proposals for a number of different players around the league. And given what we've seen from the Heat over the last couple of days and acquiring Trevor Ariza, and that we know they're probably going to be active in the trade market, or at least looking at different options, their confidence is shot. I've said that about Tyler all season long. I've said that about Duncan as well. Kelly, you know, it's harder to pinpoint whether or not this is about the trade talk or whether or not it's just Kelly being somewhat inconsistent as he has been throughout his tenure in Miami. But either way, my feeling is that these guys have to be going through some incredible amounts of pressure. But again, I will answer all of your questions that you submitted using the hashtag AskLOHeat later on in the next couple segments. Thank you so much for tuning into Locked On Heat, the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and analysis. Look, it's clear that young trio is pretty stressed, but if they're looking for a way to alleviate some of that stress, then whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me, just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is a handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of pain by releasing tension and using their signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than just vibration methods alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, or if you get an injury, or just, again, the stress of everyday life, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, and hundreds of thousands of customers and me. So try Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. That's a bargain. Go to Theragun.com/lockedon right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/lockedon. Theragun.com/lockedon. And if you're feeling a little bit more relaxed after you use your Theragun, make sure you go to BetOnline, because it's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball in full swing, an exciting slate of games there for March Madness, and the NHL. They're all actively playing right now. Make sure you get your bets on. Bet Online even covers awards and TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything. They've got you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. So I got so many questions. I'm going to try my best to address them because, again, they're talking about the trade deadline, which is just 4 days away, March 25th, just right around the corner. I'll talk about Kendrick Nunn. I'll talk about Tyler Herro. I'll talk about everybody. Because there have been so many questions, I'm going to, again, try to get to as many as possible over the next two segments. But I'll start off with this one from Ben, who writes in, what can Miami do to improve their offense? Duncan, Tyler, KO, and Kendrick all struggling, but all have it in them. Now, Ben's right. We've seen these flashes before, and I don't know that there's going to be anything that Miami can specifically do. Like, we've seen minor tweaks to their offensive repertoire in order to get Duncan better looks. We've seen Duncan become more of an off-ball cutter, but the bulk of his offense is also always going to come from the three-point shot. Kelly, I think, can make some plays by cutting, by being an off-ball screener, but he's just, you know, I didn't see that motion from him today, and I'm not sure that's because Jimmy and Bam were much more aggressive looking for their own respective shots, but Kelly, there were just plays there where he would stand in either one of their way and just kind of like float out there offensively. Tyler did that on occasion. Duncan kind of just stood there waiting for a catch and shoot opportunity, which isn't exactly the strength of his game. So he's no longer coming off of multiple screens, at least not on my first watching of the game. Maybe I'll have to go back and look at all of Duncan's shot opportunities to quantify whether or not that might be an error on my part, but it just didn't seem like he was as quick and active as he has been in the past, particularly last season when he was catching the league by surprise. Maybe some of that is due to Indiana's defense. Maybe some of that is just due to Duncan trying to do something different and maybe not really actively looking for a shot because it's struggling. Look, you have to give credit to him. At least he took a shot in, I want to say at the end of the game in regulation. Maybe yeah, he also took one in overtime too, so trying to make an impact when it mattered most, but you know, he just struggled so much for most of the game. And you know, we've all talked about this before. It's been well accepted that the Heat tried to run a first play for Duncan to get his confidence going. It's worked all of last season. He's not getting those same easy looks now. You know, just 3 of 11 from the field, from 3-point range, excuse me. So not great for him. I don't know what else they can do to get those guys going as far as finding easier looks or finding better shots. Again, a lot of the shots are wide open. And so that's why I keep coming back to it being a mental thing. Like the shots were falling last year when they were building such great chemistry and they were kind of catching NBA teams by surprise. They don't have that same luxury this year, but those shots are still there. They're just not falling. And so I don't know that it's going to necessarily mean any kind of change has to happen, although it's quite possible that a roster change will just go ahead and take everything out of the equation. Like if they all get traded or some of them get traded, then it doesn't matter whether or not you know, it's just confidence or something else, schematic or personnel or roster wise or anything like that. I think it's just a matter of, well, now it doesn't, you know, now they can practice their shooting somewhere else. The Innkeeper, great name, writes in, should Trevor Ariza take the four over at some point and let KO be the second line five? Yes, that's where I'm leaning as well. I have to admit. I think I just talked about this on Locked On NBA's national show with host Josh Lloyd. He asked me about Trevor Ariza and his impact, and I said that I think Ariza's progressing to the point where eventually he's going to be the guy that they start, a la Jay Crowder. KZ Okpala could have been that guy, but apparently he hasn't done enough to warrant that kind of I guess improved role, increased role. I think a lot of it has to do with his outside shot. And as far as Ariza, the biggest holdup is the fact that he hasn't played organized basketball in a year. So it's going to be a little different for him to than it was for Jay Crowder to take over as much as he has, because for Crowder, he was immediately impactful. Even when Andre Iguodala was still finding his sea legs, even as Miami was going through injury issue at the end of last, well, at the after the trade deadline last season, Crowder was in there and putting up 45% shots, I think, on three-point attempts. And so he was immediately impactful. He was just looking to play well on a team that was actually winning and not contribute to the Memphis Grizzlies, who, you know, they were a bubble team. They were not quite a playoff team when Crowder was on the roster. It goes to Miami that was had such a hot start to the season, and he just feels like he fit in right away. Again, and he's on a contract year too. And then as far as, you know, Ariza, I think if he starts to progress, if he starts to get a little bit more work and shakes off some of the rust, and there is absolutely rust. Like his first two shot attempts just looked really bad. He missed one very badly, another one that Karen's off the backboard. His three-point shot is just, it's not there yet. The expectation is that he will be, that once the, not the, necessarily the jitters, but once he kind of just finds that rhythm that every NBA player needs to find, he'll be fine, and eventually he'll take over the starting spot. Because I think Kelly, as good as he's been as a starter, I think he could ideally improve that second unit to a great degree, similarly to what we saw last season in the playoffs. Once Crowder was starting, it gave them an opportunity to go with Olynyk off the bench, Iguodala off the bench. You don't have to play 37-year-old Andre Iguodala as much because you've got Ariza out there. He's no spring chicken either at 35, but he hasn't played in over a year, so the expectation is that he's a little bit fresher, even though he's still rusty at this point. So, Yuli writes in, do you think this could be the Bam reawakening game? You know, kind of hard to tell, right? I don't know that we're ever going to find that consistent point for Bam this season. We've already seen incremental growth. Do we see him just go on a tear for the rest of the year? Does this stick in his craw enough where he says, you know what, I've got to be aggressive, and not just the kind of lip service he was delivering throughout most of the season where he kept acknowledging that he needed to be more aggressive and wasn't exactly being more aggressive. So maybe this could be a spark. And that's, I think, part of the frustration. I totally understand all of you Heat fans in general saying, why doesn't he do this all the time? I get that. I understand why that's frustration. Because you see moments like this where even as he's getting his shot blocked by Miles Turner, a third time down. Like he got his shot blocked by Turner twice on one possession. And then the next time down there, wound up taking it at a Turner, a legit 7-footer with shot blocking abilities, and wound up delivering as nasty a dunk, almost as nasty as the Sabonis one. And you just start to see the aggressiveness being there all game long. You're thinking to yourself, okay, this is it. This is Bam being his very best. And I don't know whether it's going to be like that next time. Now in Phoenix, their next opponent on Tuesday night, I don't think they have that same kind of rim-protecting big there. DeAndre Ayton has improved as a defender, but he's not quite a solid defender either. I think Bam could continue that tear. We'll see. This should be a good opportunity for him to show that he can and is willing to be aggressive on a consistent basis. So hopefully we'll see that reawakening game, Yuli. Thanks for writing it in. When are we getting the real Heat team? After Thursday, writes in Daniel. Can't wait to sell high on Tyler and Duncan. Look, I know Daniel didn't mean anything by the question. I think there's a lot of frustration from Heat fans here, which I totally get. That shooting coming at just this point right before the trade deadline is not a great look. It's not a great feeling for Heat fans watching them after they go. Look, even during the 11 out of 12 game winning streak, if you want to call it that, they were still struggling as shooters. Tyler had his games. Kelly was playing very well, mostly. Duncan had some occasionally good night, but I mean, Kendrick was good, then he wasn't. Kelly was good, then he wasn't. Kelly was bad, then good, then bad again. You know, it's just, it's the nature of what's going on here, and that it's just so difficult to assess what Miami is this year. And I've talked myself in and out of this position now, but I'm at a point where I also think that the pressure of the trade deadline is impacting these players, but I also think it's probably very important for Miami to make a move. I had said on many occasions, and if you had asked me last week when Miami was kind of building towards something, I thought that they would probably just continue to make changes like the Ariza deal on the fringes. I don't feel that way right now. I feel like they're not as bad as they've looked over the last three games. They probably weren't as good as they looked when they were winning 11 of 12 games, as I pointed out and got criticized for. They were taking advantage of teams that were missing key players. They were playing some bad teams like the Knicks. They played some bad teams like, you know, the Bulls that were struggling, the Orlando Magic that were a disheveled roster at that point in time. They took advantage of one big win, the best win of the season against Utah. Sure. You know, that was a solid overall game at home. Against the Lakers, no Anthony Davis, and on and on. They you know, struggle, a tight game against the Sacramento Kings. You know, you start to see little things here and there where you recognize that there isn't the same flow on offense as there should be. And I get the feeling that Miami's front office can't afford to wait any longer because of Jimmy Butler. This offseason, the plan for Giannis or anybody else is shot. I think you kind of have to just go all in on this season. And if you don't, and that's totally acceptable. I hate to hedge my bets here and say, well, maybe they'll do something and maybe they won't. But it absolutely could go both ways. I mean, there's just, that's the reality. Trades are never just hinging on one singular phone call. It's just building and building and building, and then all of a sudden the other party accepts it. Today I dreamt that the Heat traded for Kyle Lowry. I don't think that's a realistic possibility, although I'm seeing trade talk of Tyler Hero, Duncan, Kelly Olynyk, Andre Iguodala, and everybody else in exchange for Kyle Lowry and Norm Powell. I mean, sure, I guess, but I just don't see any reason why Toronto would make that trade. As far as Miami's real Heat team being available after Thursday, I get it. Maybe they'll be there, maybe they won't. And look, even if they make a trade, remember what happened last season. They made trades that ultimately paid off. Andre Iguodala, Jay Crowder, and even Solomon Hill all contributed in some way towards the bubble playoff version of the Miami Heat. It took some time to get there. After the trade deadline, after the acquisition, the team still struggled. Then there was the hiatus. And then finally, everything kind of clicked in place as the playoffs started. I'll talk about some more. I'll answer more of your questions, but you're listening to Locked On Heat. This episode is brought to you by Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom. It's a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets combat all forms of erectile dysfunction, and they can help men gain extra confidence for when it's time to perform. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It ships right to your door discreetly. The process is simple. You sign up at BlueChew.com. You consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. You don't have to go anywhere. Their licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. If you don't like swallowing pills, there's no problems here. Blue Chew's Sildenafil and Tadalafil are chewable tablets. They're easy to consume. They're made in the USA, and they prepare and ship directly to you, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. You just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast. We're also grateful to Built Bar. We've been telling you about them for a while. They've been longtime sponsors of the Locked On Podcast Network. And if you haven't tasted them, what are you doing with your life? They're the best tasting protein bar in the market and have been for a while. Amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great taste, 100% chocolate in all their bars. And now's the time to find out which Built Bar is the best, because it's Built Bar Madness. We've got another great matchup for you today. Coconut, who had moved on, against Cookie Dough Chunk, which I thought was a huge, huge upset. And then they've got Birthday Cake as the other flavor. Coconut versus Birthday Cake that knocked out Mocha. I mean, that's incredible. This is an upset as I've never seen before since, I don't know, another upset. In any case, you've got Coconut versus Birthday Cake. Birthday Cake is, as you would imagine, tastes a little bit cakey. It's not heavy. I'm thinking myself a Birthday Cake like ice cream. You know, it could be a little heavy, a little too much. But the Built Bar version of a Birthday Cake, it just feels great. It's just such a great taste. It's light. It's a really, really good flavor. Coconut, really good. I'm just not a big coconut fan myself. I do like the bars. I just don't see myself really going this way. For me, it's an easy choice. I'm going Birthday Cake all the way. Go to BuiltBar.com or at @bar_built on Twitter and vote for yourself. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com, and check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar of them all. continue answering some of your questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLHeat. But before I do that, just a reminder, do you want more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA draft? Then you should be listening to the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft. I'll get back to some of your questions now. This next one comes in from Miami Sports Junkie. I was on their podcast recently. Got a great show. Definitely make time to check it out. He writes in, well, we asked this on our pod, the one I was on. Would the current win streak make the front office stand pat? That was during the streak. And now that the Heat are in a three-game losing streak, when the competition gets better, do you think that changes? Yeah, kind of similar to what I was getting at before the break there. I just feel like Miami's feeling much more pressure now than they did. I think even that during the streak, it was kind of obvious this Miami Heat team wasn't at elite level contention status. And I don't know how they get there this season. They might not have another move. I think I leaned more towards depth being a factor as far as this season is concerned, because when you have so many players who can contribute, it's good, especially when you've got so many players losing time due to health and safety protocols. You still haven't had Avery Bradley healthy for a long stretch. You need his perimeter defense. Certainly would have been a big plus today against Brogdon and Justin Holiday and everybody else. It would have been great to be able to keep Holiday from hitting two big three-pointers at the end of the game, to keep TJ McConnell from making blind no-look passes to a cutting Dylan McDermott. You get a guy like Bradley, a solid defensive player, and that changes the complexity of the game for Miami in Miami's favor. So, look, it's really impossible to gauge where Miami's front office is. They want to make a big move. That's clear. Do you want to make it now? We have just a month and a half left of the regular season. Do you want to make a push to be an elite team this year, knowing that Brooklyn, Philadelphia, maybe Milwaukee are all still better than you are? That's a tough ask, and I don't know that there's a clear answer to that. As far as the flip side of that is, can you afford to stand pat? Can you afford to waste another half season of Jimmy, knowing that he is going to continue to slightly regress over the course of the rest of his career just because of age and minutes and everything else? He's been phenomenal this year. Clearly, the team's MVP, perhaps even a league MVP to some degree. I saw some Twitter person commenting on that Jimmy has struggled in the clutch and failed the Heat to some occasion. I don't buy it. Maybe he hasn't been great in the clutch. I don't think he's necessarily been a big problem for Miami. He's not the reason why Miami has lost the games that they have. Let's put it that way. I feel like, again, they're leaning towards making a move. Now, you know, could you keep this team together and figure it out? Sure. I just don't see that happening. Like, there's too much involved here for Miami. You know, you don't want to ever – this team has never been about standing pat. They wasted 2 years. At least that's how they feel internally. They wasted 2 years of Dwayne Wade's career. They know that. They wanted to build a big three. Absolutely. They wanted Giannis. They thought they had a chance and an inside track of getting Antetokounmpo. Maybe he could be acquired down the road. But that doesn't mean anything. Then you can still do what you have to do. You just punt on making moves later on. You acquire whatever assets you can. You continue to develop players internally. And then you have them in a place where you can make a swing for a home run swing. I think Oladipo will be in a Heat uniform by the end of the week. That's just how I feel right now. I feel like there's just too much buzz about it. I feel like Oladipo wants to come here. I feel like he's going to turn up his gameplay. He's going to struggle here, guys. I'll be honest with you. I feel like there's going to be a big game from him here and there. He's going to also occasionally struggle just because I don't know that he's ever going to be the player he was during his all-star season in Indiana. The injuries take something out of you. That's not to say that next year when he resigns, he's not going to become an all-star again. And in that case, you have three all-stars. Hopefully you can keep one of either Tyler or Duncan in the process. And if you can keep that, then you can start building a new identity around three all-stars in Bam, Jimmy, and Oladipo. Because I do think he can get to that point again if you have the proper amount of time, the offseason, to make sure his conditioning's at Heat levels, that they're working with his trainer to get him to that next level. I realize I've gone a little long on some of my answers here, so I'm going to wrap it up and probably try to answer some more of these questions in tomorrow's episode. This question comes in from Ryu, I think. Not sure how to ask this in a real question, But I'd like your thoughts on these missed timeouts. The refs have to do their jobs, but something has to give. Look, it's so hard to kind of put any pressure on them. Like, coaches are always going to complain about refereeing. Players are always going to complain about refereeing. In the case of Eric Spoelstra, again, looking at the replay, in real time, it's so hard to pick this up. You've got Lauren Holtkamp running, you know, a 4.5 40 to get to the other side of the court so she can see what's going on with Jimmy Butler, that he doesn't step out of bounds, that he doesn't, you know, does he put his foot on the three-point line or not? Does he make contact with anybody? Does he ignite? Does he palm the ball? You're trying to watch all these different things at once. And sure, it's a three-person crew, but that doesn't make it any easier. There's always going to be challenges with refereeing. And as far as Spo is concerned, yeah, he's right. The mask makes it a little harder. It muffles your voice. Even Eric Spoelstra, who we know is loud and can get the attention of referees, what can he do? Like, he basically, what he turned around in disgust and kind of bumped into Lauren to make sure that she knew he wanted to call a timeout, and it still wasn't as obvious enough, and she didn't call it. And it doesn't matter anyway, because Jimmy, like he said, was going to take that shot. There's always going to be blown calls, or what you feel are blown calls. As fans, as passionate fans, I understand why you always think refereeing sucks. I saw that a number of times today. Maybe there were some egregious calls. Maybe there were some bad calls. I didn't see anything either egregious or particularly bad. I don't put any of the blame on tonight's game on that. Like, Lauren Holtkamp missing a timeout call didn't keep Tyler Hero from hitting any of his three-point shots. Nor did they keep Duncan Robinson from hitting 10 of his three-point shots, or Kelly Olynyk, and on, right? I mean, this is what we're getting at here. You get frustrated because it's a loss, and yeah, it's easy to point at the Zebras, right, the referees, and blame them for it. But it's not their fault. Those are, again, I've said this before, and I love this quote from Matt Moore and his explanation about foul calls. Refereeing is an act of God. You can't predict it. You don't know what's going to happen. It could change over the course of a game. Sometimes you get a nice, bright, sunny day. Sometimes your picnic gets rained out. Sometimes lightning strikes your tree. Sometimes a tornado blows that tree through the front of your house. I'm not laughing about any kind of acts of God, to be honest with you. But just the comparison to referees is an apt one. You never know. They're making hundreds of calls as a three-man crew over the course of a game. And you have to let some slide. Like, some of those fouls that Sabonis got called for, I didn't think they were particularly bad calls. Like, I don't think he should have fouled out. Like, maybe there were three or four other ones that he should have gotten the foul call for. But the sixth one, the one that took him out of the game on Bam, it was incidental contact where he kind of put his hand on Bam's chest as he's driving into him. Like, what are you going to do? We've seen that throughout NBA history. Players are going to put hands up like that. Like, you're just kind of positioning yourself, especially for a player that's 6'9 and as quick as Adebayo is. It's like, what are you going to do? You just stand there and just kind of like, what? How do you defend that? You know, the Sabonis just kind of thrust his hip towards him, then he's going to get called for an obvious foul there. You know, so it doesn't make it easy. The refereeing and rules association and anything else has kind of changed to the degree where they can keep offenses flowing, because that's what fans love to see, and it makes a lot of sense. Although, unfortunately, you get enough people over at TNT and on Twitter and other social media platforms that criticize the game because it's all three-point shots and analytics, even though it's neither of those things. The point is, I don't think you can blame the refereeing. I don't think it's a problem. I think lots of people want to make it a problem, and I just don't see it. There's always going to be bad calls. There's always going to be calls that somebody agrees with. It's just, there's no way around it. And I don't want to put the blame on them. Like, I have said before that I don't put the blame on refereeing. And then I've also gone and said, look, there's a game here and there, very few, but a game here and there, particularly in the playoffs when I'm a little bit more passionate about my coverage, and then I say to myself, man, that call was really bad, and I get frustrated and worked up in a way that I probably don't in a mid-March game. So yeah, maybe I'm just different that way, and that I don't have that same passion during the regular season that all of you do. But that's what makes you great. That's what makes you unique. That's why you send in such incredible questions, and I'm really grateful for all those questions. And grateful for all of you subscribing to the show on a regular basis. Of course, you can always continue to count on me to provide the latest recaps, news, and analysis. Just a reminder, you can always reach me via email too at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please subscribe. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you for your support.